Welcome to the Bullets and Bourbon Podcast, where it's not about the bourbon, but more about who you share it with.
Welcome back, everybody, to Season 2 of the Bullets and Bourbon Podcast. Thank you for joining us. Tonight, we are very, very blessed. We have two great, amazing people here from Liberty Pole Spirits, the founder, Jim Huff, and his son, Kevin, who stopped by and came down for some pours and some sticks and some fellowship. And we're going to jump right into this episode. We're gonna really dive into some interesting stuff for those of you whiskey people out there. It's a learning experience for me as well. I'm super excited to get some answers to some long questions I have. So we'll start off with what we're drinking. Dan, what do you have in your cup, first of all?
Well, we got Liberty Pole here, so I'm definitely going with Liberty Pole.
Good choice.
They just had a release this past Sunday that we went to.
Yeah.
It's the Applewood. It's a limited release. It's good.
How good?
I wish they had more bottles. That's how good.
You put them on the spot right here.
Put them on the spot. We're only allowed one bottle per person, and I wish I could have had two or three people come with me to pick up the bottle.
Game the system.
Yeah. Definitely got a game the system.
Yeah.
This one looks like, what is it, 103 proof? We just had Widow Chain Applewood last week.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And I would put this up against the Widow Chain Applewood any day of the week.
Yeah.
Blind taste test. Honestly, and I'm not saying it because they're here, I would probably...
And the gun's not at your head right
the
now.
The gun's not at your head. But I'd honestly probably, on a blind taste test, I'd go with the Liberty Pole.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think that everybody knows, who knows me well, knows I'm a Liberty Pole fan. Absolutely. I'm gonna apologize for that. Fight me. I went with Peated Rye Batch 5, and this was a release that... Guys, how long ago was it, the Batch 5?
So last year, 2023.
And I think I got my hands. I was lucky to get my hands on a couple bottles. I've been working my through them. It's a peated rye whiskey, and peated to a lot of people. I don't know a lot about peated, and so I'm super excited to kind of pick your brains about what peated is, and I have all kinds of questions. Like, did you guys invent that? are we like? In the company of the founders of this, what gives with the peated?
So peated is a very traditional Scotch style of whiskey, right? So, at the very basic whiskey making process is malting grains, usually barley, right? Malting grains basically involves keeping them warm and moist and letting them germinate. And then drying them in a kiln or on a floor to stop that germination. But, in Scotland, specifically in kind of the Islay region of Scotland, they didn't have a lot of hardwood forest. Back before there were natural gas pipelines to run your kilns, what could they do? Well, they had a lot of peat bogs. So they would dig up bricks of peat from the bogs, dry it out, and then use those bricks as fuel for their kilns to dry this malted barley. And, it's an organic fuel. It's very moist even after drying. So it's very smoky. So as they dried that grain, that smoke would infuse into the barley. And when they mashed that into the whiskey making process, that smoke came through and it stayed with that whiskey all through the mashing and the fermentation and the distilling. And that's where peat gets its characteristic smoky flavor.
No kidding.
Yeah.
I love peated scotch. I love peated rye. You guys got me into rye and peated everything. I had no idea I guess I always had it in my head that it was an additive, and I never understood that process. That's pretty incredible. So – I've never seen another peated bourbon or rye in the U.S. yet. Are you guys unique?
So we are not. I mean, there are other American distilleries that do this. We weren't the first. We were kind of on the cutting edge. But the story goes back to my hobby distilling days, which I think we might want to talk about.
Yes, we were going to get there. So I definitely, the story of Liberty Pole is so, so cool. And if you can talk about it and share how you got your sons into it, and it's a family thing, that's golden for us. And I know the listeners would really love it.
Yeah. You know, the statute of limitations, I think, has expired on kind of operating.
Okay, we,
we hope.
Yeah.
Hypothetically.
Yeah, quotation marks are being thrown up. If this happens.
Allegedly.
Yeah.
But I may have had a very small copper, backyard still, 10 gallons. And I only got it because I was interested in whiskey. And, I didn't really want to go through the, process that a lot of my friends were making beer or wine. And, I'd been there, done that. But nobody was making whiskey. So I thought it would be fun to learn how to make whiskey. And so I the kids wanted to get me a beer making, or actually was it mom wanted to get me a beer making kit for Father's Day. And you guys said, well, Dad likes whiskey. Let's get him a still. So it was just this process of, I wanted to learn how to make whiskey. And Rob and Kevin were both kind of science kids. They were very interested in science. And so, and they were probably interested in whiskey too, but this was back in middle school. So,
allegedly.
Back in middle school, so I didn't want to believe they really were interested in whiskey. I wanted to believe they were interested in the science, but we had a lot of fun. I mean, it was a real father-son bonding experience. We discovered fermentation and distillation, and it was just never intending it to become a family business,
right?
But here we are, 15 years later, and both Rob and Kevin are full time. I mean, they really run the back of the house. They do all the production. They do all the planning. They do all the logistics. It's an amazing story.
There's a couple jokes that both Rob likes to tell people that. So we were both mechanical engineering students, and Rob likes, my older brother likes to joke that I was very unemployable. And so mom and dad started a distillery so the youngest son would have a job, and there's that.
I can picture this conversation with Rob here.
It would be completely different.
But we also joke too that that there was a funny story of dad with his British friend who really liked dad's spirits and said his peated whiskey that he was making on his home still was bloody fantastic.
So that's why I asked about your neighbors being Brits. So Ellen, my wife, is a huge peat head. She loves peat. So we were making bourbon and rye and corn whiskey. And she finally said to me one day, well, you've got this backyard still. You're having all this fun with the boys. Why don't you make something that I like? And I knew what she meant. I knew she meant it, a peated whiskey. So,
right.
Back in those days, as a hobby distiller, you can only get your grains from a brewery supply store. We weren't big enough that we were able to order from the big companies we order from now. So I would go to the brewery supply store. And if you've ever had a peated beer, which you probably have never had, but peat goes a long way. And you can get it in brewery supply stores, but it's in quarter-pound bags, ounces. It's measured. And so the cost for me to do a single peated malt whiskey was like way more than I wanted to spend. So I thought, okay, well, maybe I'm cheap. Yeah. But I still wanted to make mama happy. So I thought, okay, I can buy enough of this and add it to a bourbon mash. And that's where the peated bourbon was born, because I was trying to make a whiskey that my wife would like. And, to kind of complete Kevin's story, I used to golf with a couple guys, and they knew I made whiskey, and they were always asking me to bring whiskey in. And one of them was a British guy. And I brought in my whiskey one day, and I brought in this peated bourbon. And my other two friends, they're typical Pittsburghers, man. They just took that down the hatch,
shoot
right?
Down the hatch,
yeah,
right?
Shoot it down the hatch. But Ian, great British name, Ian, he had this glass and he was swirling it. He was nosing it, and he left nostril, right nostril, you know, top of the glass. It was taking him, and I'm like thinking, Jesus, Ian, you know, come on, finish the glass. And it took him like 5 minutes to taste this little pour. And when he finally finished the pour, he slammed the glass on the table and said, "That's bloody fantastic." And I went home that day and I told Ellen, because I had been thinking about this for a while. I said, "Ellen, I think we should think about starting a distillery. I think we have something that's unique."
So born on a golf course.
Born on a golf course.
I think that night was when I put the down payment on the
Are you serious? So because you were retired at the time, right?
No,
you weren't retired yet.
I was full-time still,
And then how many years before the Washington store opened?
From that point, that was probably 2013. So it was 3 years until we opened. You know, we formed an LLC shortly thereafter and found property and spent a year, you know, kind of rehabbing the building. And we opened, you know, we started distilling in April of 2016 and opened the doors in July of 2016. So
for those of you that are local, that got the opportunity to go down to the old store, and that was what, Maiden Street, right?
Yep.
It was such an eclectic old building. It was beautiful, the meeting house. I mean, you walk in, I've been to the Bourbon Trail a lot, but it was unlike most. You walk in and the history, it punches you in the face. I felt like that. I brought my kids in there, and you guys were so grateful. You pulled them back and walked them through how this is made and stuff. It was really, everybody that went in there, you did walk out and you'd be like, wow. And I thought to myself, well, how do you top that when you get ready to move to a new location? And you did. Pretty doggone massively to the new location. And talk about that move. That, how does that happen, and how much years rolled off your life in this process, right? Yeah.
You know, I think like a lot of things, you know, I think everything happens for a reason. We had initially, you know, we were at the time 4, 5, 6 years into the old place, and we actually, our vision was to expand at that place,
right?
And we wanted to basically, we were leasing the place, our old place, and we wanted to basically acquire that place and the building next door. Mm-hmm. And we had this kind of vision for like a whiskey campus. And you see a lot of this, you know, in Kentucky, and take a lot of great notes from those guys. And that was kind of like our vision, was this Washington whiskey campus. And things just didn't quite work out. You know, we were going through this process, and one thing leads to another, and the deal just didn't quite work out, and we were really disheartened. It was like a big bummer, and my dad had called a friend in the real estate business, and was just asking, like, is there anything around the area that maybe, this was like an hour after the meeting that we had that went really south, And my dad's friend had said, okay, there's this really cool piece of property that might be a really good fit. And we went from an hour after being like really let down,
huge,
that like our whole dreams got crushed, to we were standing in the grassy fields of our future campus.
Wow.
And it was just like, this is like a, you know, godsend, where it's just like, this is such a cool opportunity.
And we all knew. I mean, we knew when we drove up
that was the place.
Yeah, it was the place.
So. A heck of a location.
And it turned into something that was entirely, I think, way bigger than we had initially kind of visioned. And then it turned into, we are, like, through and through, we love whiskey. We're massive whiskey fans. That's what we love. Yeah. We love the experience of whiskey. We love the people that you meet through whiskey. All the flavors that are derived from whiskey. And just, like, this whole thing is fascinating to us. And we feel so fortunate. It's just such a cool thing that blossomed from what we thought was like a massive disappointment to maybe the greatest thing that's ever happened.
Yeah, it is mean, watching from the sidelines and being a fan of it and seeing what you guys have grown, the relationships that have come out of it. It's always fun on the single barrel release days. You go get in line, and I drug these two there. You have conversations with guys, and you're joking around, and you know all these people, and you're wondering. We're gauging. We're like, all right, I wonder if this is going to be a line that makes it all the way down to the back of the parking lot. Ooh, maybe if some weather rolls in, we can get two bottles. You know, it's fun to watch where it's grown. How, from your perspective, Jim, as the dad, how cool is it that you got both your boys, you got your family, everybody's there, these relationships, everybody's in there working.
Hopefully today's a good day.
Yeah. Jason, I mean, you know, you're a dad. I'm blessed every day. Family businesses are the best, and they're tough at times too. But you know, I think that over the 8 years we've been doing this, we've really kind of become comfortable in our roles, and every member of the family has a role, and we've learned to kind of leave mom and dad and sons at the door. And when we're at the distillery, we're peers. We're in this business together, and there's no mom, there's no dad, and it's a blessing. And you know, I see my granddaughter, so that's the beautiful thing, because they the boys will bring in the girls from daycare, and you know, that's kind of my role for 2-3 nights a week, is to babysit the girls for an hour while Rob and Kevin finish up the work on the floor.
By finish up, that means tastings, right?
No, I wish. And it's cleaning. Most people don't realize that owning a distillery is 90% cleaning. I mean, it is.
We drink our fair share of whiskey, but it is.
Yeah.
So it's a lot of cleaning.
I've had some great moments. I mean, just personally, you know, getting to know all of you. I think what was really fun for us was it 2 weeks ago? Yeah, it was 2 weeks ago. Yeah. We walk in, I randomly, you know, got super excited and you know, I got a travel case for my whiskey, and I run down there. I needed whiskey anyway, just so everybody knows. It's dual purpose. And I walk in, and right away you grabbed me and brought me back there, and we sat down and we did some single barrel samplings. And yep. What an amazing experience. We were with Daryl's Proof, you know, your friends from and we've gotten to know, and it was really cool to sit and go through that experience. Yeah. And to see what people, the processes, and to score some of these barrels, and to be around like-minded people. And what do you, is that your favorite moments, or is it the quiet moments? Is it the time that you spend in the Rick House putting barrels up that you enjoy?
No, that honestly, that we've been talking about that for the last couple days. That was a really cool experience. That's something we haven't done a lot of. But this single barrel program that we've had is definitely something that's kind of taken a life on of its own. And we have a lot of pride behind it. You know, I think we have some really cool barrels in the Rick House, and we always want to pick really fun barrels. And that day was really special because, we had legitimate intentions of trying to narrow down some particular barrels. And so that day we had pulled a whole lot of samples, and you came in at the perfect moment, and there's definitely a select few people that we very care about their opinions. And so that was a really I didn't want to say it. I was trying to be quiet.
One of them, though.
Let me have my moment. I feel special for once in my life.
Oh yeah, but that was one of those opportunities where the more we get into the single barrel program, it's we want to pick barrels that are really, really special,
right.
And so the opportunity to have kind of feedback from people who get to try a lot of barrels was really special.
We've never done that before. You know, our single barrel selection, it's serious. I mean, we're not allowed to joke. I mean, we have it's quiet. It's note taking. So that was really cool. These guys loved having kind of interested participants that, you know, had no stake in the game, right? You guys were there. You had your own palates, and you were giving really valuable feedback that we haven't experienced before.
So with that said, and I have a question, you know, how do you decide what's going to go out to the state stores here in PA and what you're going to do with a limited release? Because the limited release, when you did the Applewood last week, you know, that's the first time I was there, and I was impressed by the line, the people. Like, how was it such a big... It's something you guys do on a regular basis, but the people that are Liberty Pool drinkers, it was nice to meet them, talk to them, and see their passion for bourbon. But, you know, when we came out for that barrel pick taste test, and I'm going to be biased, that barrel 525, I can't wait for that. But how do you decide what's going to go to the state stores and what's going to be limited release?
So we have kept a very close to the chest release. Our mentality is we want to be the best whiskey producers possible, right? And so we have not expanded incredibly far. We keep it a very tight to the chest products, because at the end of the day, everything that goes into bottles better be the best possible whiskey that it could be. And so what goes to the state stores is our 92 proof stuff that we saw out of the states or our distillery. Everything that we're super proud to put into bottles that we would sell at our distillery, that goes to state stores. And then when it comes to what is on the single barrel program, that is kind of like, I'd maybe call it like the elevated, like sort of like
unique
selection process.
Yeah. So.
Go ahead.
I was going to say that. So we're constantly tasting barrels. So
hardest part of our job.
Torture.
When we need to restock our 92 proof bourbon, we're tasting every bourbon barrel that is of age that could go into that blend.
Right.
And as we go through those barrels, there are some barrels that just stand out, like
whether
this,
they're like crazy unique or just like super exemplified of like what we expect in a rye. It's one or the other.
So we'll mark those barrels as potential single barrels.
You star them?
Yeah. We chock them.
We write them down, and then actually we'll take and we'll write an LP in chalk on the barrel, and then when it's selected, it gets a circle around it.
Yeah. Nice. So you know, we will do our blends. We may or may not include a barrel that could be a single barrel.
Yeah.
Depends on whether it elevates the blend, or if we can create a great blend with and still save that for a future single barrel, we'll do that, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, and that's kind of our process.
There's not a blend that goes out or a single barrel that goes out that's like, this is like just okay. Right, and I think that's something we're really proud of. There's not like
hit that.
Yeah, there's a metric and quality standard that it has to hit, and so nothing goes out that's like below that. But then when it comes to the single barrel program, it is like this bar of like it's got to be either really unique, where it's like grapes or rye that it was like super like
pecan pie.
That's my favorite barrel today. It is grapes rye, but yeah, pecan pie. Right, yeah. And so it's either got to be like really off profile in a way that hits
good
home.
Yeah.
Or it's gotta be like High Tides, which is like a really great, like peated bourbon barrel, mm-hmm. That just hit all the notes and it just rounded out everything perfectly. And then whenever it comes down to the single barrels, like the way we'll do it is like, okay, we'll mark these barrels. And then it's like, we try to do maybe like one a month or two a month or one every other month. If there's not anything there, like we won't release it. But then once there's like kind of like the next month's barrels are coming out, we'll take like barrels that are what we think are pretty good or like worthy of the single barrel program. And then it goes out to the whole crew and we'll basically sit down and be like, okay, do these ones hit the standard of our single barrel program?
Right.
And we'll try them against past single barrels and be like, okay, can like you see High Tides, you see Banana Bread, you see Applewood.
Raspberry.
Raspberry.
Raspberry,
right?
Yeah.
And you basically say, okay, you see these old single barrels, and there's a standard that is of the single barrels. Does this next one meet that standard? And that is kind of like our like final check, and then boom, if it gets selected, then
and
we're up.
And that's kind of the thing that I'm most proud of, is that I think that the Liberty Pole fans that line up, they trust our palates now. They know that we're not going to release a single barrel just to release it, right?
Yeah, you know, it's not there.
Yeah, if it's not there, we're not going to release it. So
I remember we keep on talking about the inception, where you guys came from, your birth, and I will never forget. So I've been active duty military for about 20-some years. Moved back to here 2019. Jason, met Jason. He introduced me to Liberty Pole. So I went down to your all's location in Washington. Wife and I walk in there, though. I thought I knew a little bit about bourbon at the time, though, whiskey. I thought I was a 1 to 10. I thought I was like a 6.
You're well, 3. You've always been a 3. Right,
yeah. So I go down to Liberty Pole. Never been there before, though. And here comes Ellen. Ellen comes and sits down like we've known each other for 10 years.
Oh yeah.
She sat down and, I've traveled a lot in the world, been to a lot of places. It was one of the most memorable moments because you all sat down. She sat down with me and she sat with my wife and I, and she realized I was a 2 out of 10. I knew nothing about bourbon at all. She gave us the educational lesson for free, though. But I remember to this day, and I know, Jim, you probably don't remember. You run into so many people, but I had you all sign a bottle that day. I asked you to take a picture with me, sign a bottle. I knew you all were probably going to go places, and it was the way you all treated your customers, you just embraced everybody like their family sitting there, though. And I still have that bottle sitting in my bar at home. I will probably never crack it open.
Wow.
It will always sit there that you and your wife signed out.
Until I steal it.
Fast forward, here I am drinking your peated rye, like Jason here, the
batch
2023.
Five.
Right? Batch 5.
Batch 5.
Yeah, that one.
For bourbon drinkers out there, though, I think everything's an acquired taste. Higher
proof's
an acquired taste. Peated's an acquired taste. Peated, for me, has been a struggle.
Yes.
A little bit.
We addressed that in the first podcast, I believe.
That was season one where Jason tried to kill me with Octomore.
Peated is very polarized.
For those trying to get into a peated or walk into a peated, this is a very mild, to me, it's almost like that. For my palate, it's a very sweet peat. It's very good as we sit here and keep on pouring it more.
But the bottle's almost gone.
Yeah, it's a great introduction to walk into peat, though. So,
I panic and look for my backup bottle of Batch 5.
But no, you all are doing an amazing job. Thank you all for being in the area.
Thank you for recounting that story. It's it's touching, and that's we try to do that. That's what really is part and parcel to what we try to do. We want to give people the best whiskey experience. And if that means talking to Kevin or Ellen or me or Rob or Jeff.
Not Rob.
Right? But, to have that owner distiller experience, you don't get that in a lot of places.
It never feels like you're trying.
No, we're not. I mean, it's part of our – right. And I would be remiss if I didn't single out Ellen as kind of the beating heart of the front of the house of our distillery. She's
an Encyclopedia Britannica of knowledge.
Well,
I cannot believe how
she would have you believe that. But
she's so fair enough.
But
she'll love this podcast.
She's our brand. She's our cocktail, mixology.
I'm so glad you
brought that up.
I have a question.
Yes.
I'm not big in mixing my bourbon.
Okay.
But was it 2 years ago we did the whiskey
trip,
whiskey walk,
whiskey rebellion? Remember the thing in Washington?
Sure.
What was it called?
Yeah, the whiskey walk.
Whiskey walk. Yeah.
And that's the first time I had a mixed drink with bourbon.
Okay.
And it was at Liberty Pole. Yep. You guys were down there.
Oh, so good.
Absolutely phenomenal.
Yeah.
Jason has been taking me more and more down to your new location, and I've been trying more and more of the mixed drinks. Who comes up with those cocktails? Not only are they good, but I'll leave and I'll be like, how many did I have? And I'm like, I only had 2 drinks. How am I this... Am I good to drive?
Yeah.
When you drink eight of the coffee ones in a row and then try to say it's two, that's the problem.
It's an amazing job on the cocktails. It's
so 100%. That's Ellen. She runs the cocktail program, and you know that kind of goes back to, you know, when we were releasing 6 month old whiskey, right? I mean, you know, it was 5 gallon barrel aged whiskey, and it was, you know, we were proud of it, but you know, but we realized that we needed to kind of cultivate a group of whiskey fans that you know that would appreciate the whiskey. And you know, maybe a 6 month old whiskey wasn't something that, you know, appealed to a lot of whiskey fans, but a well crafted whiskey cocktail, right? Mm-hmm. I grew up in Pittsburgh. I'm an old guy. You know, I was probably very old. You know, I was probably in my 40s before I realized that, you know, you didn't have to drink whiskey with a shot followed by a beer, right? I mean, you know, that was kind of the Pittsburgh, right? We drank shots and beers. And I think a lot of that mentality still exists. So Ellen decided that, you know, hey, to make this young whiskey kind of really resonate with people, we needed to develop a great craft cocktail program. And she had no experience in cocktail making, but she was a great cook.
Yeah, okay.
And she knew flavors and she knew balance.
Wow.
And so she basically jumped in both feet, and I think she's the best mixologist.
She's a stud. One of my favorite stories, like at the old place especially, there was a lot of like, she would come in and she would like have these ideas, right? And there would be like so many iterations. Actually, in the very early days, she used to change up cocktails once a week. We would, instead of like where now we do the monthly cocktails, every single week would be four different cocktails.
I remember several times coming in.
Insanity.
And she would just hand me something to try.
Yeah.
It wasn't just me, it was everybody walking by.
Focus group Friday.
And it was like you taste it, you'd be like, whoa, what is this?
Yeah.
Oh, it's
something,
something, something. And I'd be like, what?
The craziest
thing.
Wow. And so one of my favorite stories of all time, and I don't remember exactly what the cocktail was, but she came in like on a Monday. She's like, I had a dream about a cocktail. And like she's like, I got to try out this cocktail. And like that's mom. Like that is what she is so good at and one of the best there is.
Yeah.
And it's so cool.
And you know, Dan, you hit the nail on the head, right? It's we have turned so many kind of people that think I don't like whiskey into whiskey drinkers because they have discovered, holy, you know, I don't know if this is explicit or not, but
it's explicit.
Holy shit.
Yeah. we're a bunch of
vets. Okay, all right.
We're working really hard to keep this somewhat in control tonight.
Holy shit. There's whiskey in this cocktail, and they want to go home and make those cocktails.
Oh, yeah.
So they're taking home Liberty Pole rye or bourbon to replicate those cocktails. And
it
you
comes
know,
out nothing like
Liberty. No.
I'll tell you what, there's the one with the healthy.
Oh my God. Yeah.
I don't know what it is, but
cranberry in the rye.
Oh yeah.
Don't taste like, even if you're not a bourbon drinker, it's not baked into cocktails.
Is that what the one with the peated?
That's rye.
That's rye. There is the peated one.
There's a lot of peated ones this month that are.
It's very the peated cocktail is very good. You don't really taste the peated.
You don't, and that's the scary thing.
The smoky chipotle.
You really don't taste the bourbon. It's enjoyable. It's not like a lot of times you go to these restaurants in the city. There's a lot of syrupy drinks, and it just kills the alcohol. But you go to Liberty Pole. And it's an enjoyable drink. It's not too sugary, not too sweet, not too sour. It's smooth.
It hits a spot. I think there's a lot of moods. Mm-hmm. I look at the menu and I go, oh, I'm fat. I can't have that one. I may go on a sugar coma. I'm having that one. I even, the other day I got the flatbread because I like to eat food. And I ended with a smoked old fashioned and I drank it. It was delicious. Smoked old fashioned delicious. I mean, but I thought to myself, what am I doing with a smoked old fashioned, when I have all these that Ellen crafted? Like, what's wrong with them?
Yeah. No,
you know what I mean?
Don't,
like,
don't feel bad. The smoked old fashioned.
It is good.
So the burnt sugar syrup that mom does for the old fashions is somewhat unique. Not everyone does like a burnt sugar syrup for the old fashioned.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so you do have some mom influence on that old fashioned.
What is this you're talking about? What does she do?
An old fashioned, right, is typically whiskey, sugar, bitters.
Right.
And early on, and I think it was actually an influence from a chef friend that mom had met, talking about how you ought to burn your sugar. So from very early on, mom's been doing a burnt sugar simple syrup, where you basically you take table sugar, white table sugar, and you cook it prior to making a simple syrup.
Dry.
Simple syrups are made with, you know, you heat up water and then you add normal sugar to it, and so it's a clear simple syrup. But if you take and cook your just sugar and it caramelizes, and then you add your water to it, and it has such this viscosity and like very dark flavors.
Depth of flavor.
That's wicked. And it makes such a really, really good old fashioned.
We got another family recipe tonight.
Yes, sir. we will completely mess that up. We'll burn the house down.
It's so funny. There is definitely a technique to it, and you can take and you can caramel, like burn the heck out of a sugar, and it can be really dark or it can be really light. And like I've gone at home and I've tried to make my own burnt sugar syrup, and I think I've gotten a little bit better over the years, but it ain't like mama.
Yeah,
like
the way she does it is very, very solid.
But our goal, Ellen's goal, is we want the whiskey to be the star of the cocktail.
Yeah, yeah.
See, right. So
I don't want to delete another episode.
Good.
On this episode, we talk.
We're
about
good.
Yeah. All right.
Hey, listen, guys.
Waving my hands around.
We are raw. We are authentic, and we almost deleted yet another episode. So we did one last Thursday, and then Dan, who is the master of all technology, threw his phone across the room.
Is it degenerate of all technology?
Wait. So we almost had another disaster. But we're okay.
It's kind of hard when you drink a lot of bourbon before and during a podcast to make sure everything runs right.
Well, right.
I get it, yeah.
Hey, so, would you guys mind if I actually poured a little bit more of the applewood?
Because I want you to pour what you pour.
My glass is empty. So
I got to do one thing for Ellen, because every time that I walk in, she gives me a big hug. There are times I've gone down there to pick something up, or I'm down in the area Lowe's where I've realized that I got to buy some more crap for this ongoing house projects, and I'll stop in, and always a smile, always a hug. Anytime I've had the kids there, she has whisked Milo and Oliver off, and it just absolutely epitomizes the whole familyness. Is that a word? Why am I asking Army? Is that a word here? Don't look at me like that.
Whoa.
To be quiet. So just wonderful. And yes, the craft cocktails. I'm going to lobby very, very hard for a book.
Yes.
Book?
It's in the works.
Yes, so, there we go. Well,
Ellen has literally several hundred cocktail recipes.
Oh.
But
there we go. Game
so,
over.
So she wants to do a Liberty Pole cocktail recipe book. But knowing Ellen and knowing that she's an engineer and she doesn't want to cut corners and she wants
to... It'll be perfect.
It'll be perfect.
And
but, Plumbob. But, yeah. And so it's taking longer because she wants to do it perfectly. But it will be out. Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
I know that I'm speaking for all of us and probably every single listener and fan of Liberty Pole. Okay. That thing hits the shelves, and please print a lot. Or there'll be fist fights, because those are great. There are some that I look forward to the next month, and I'm like, I remember this.
Do you have a favorite cocktail of the Liberty Pole cocktail? Because I do.
The minute you said cock, you had him.
Yeah, there we go. Son of a bitch.
I did stumble between cock and tail. My bad.
PG 13.
Oh, really?
I was hoping to go there.
Oh,
had to go on a different platform.
You son of a bitch! We won't get to you on this episode, but I'm glad you're back.
Yep.
You better pray to God the Marine gets here first.
So what's your favorite cocktail?
Can
you even pick one?
No, I really can't. So. I look forward month to month. There was one, and I forget the name of it. It was back in November. I brought my daughter and her boyfriend, country music singer, and I got them hooked. And I think he downed like, what was it, 4 or 5 of these things.
Is that the night he threw up all over your floor?
No. That was interrogation night time around. So short story, that my wife does the interrogation. She was an interrogator in the military, and he didn't last very long. Hell of a good dude. I don't want to like him, but I love him. Mm-hmm. He's a good guy.
Yep.
But I don't remember what cocktail it was.
November.
November. It was a fruity one, because I'm a sugary guy. So when we crossed that threshold, I definitely lean more towards a sugar base, because I'm fat and I like stuff that makes it fat. So
I'm fat too. Yeah. And my favorite is the December hot butter bourbon.
Oh, that one was divine. That one was good. That's tough. That makes it hard now.
What's the one you guys had this month that it was like a pineapple?
The Panama Punch.
The Panama Punch.
That Panama Punch.
Fresh squeezed pineapple.
And I'll tell you what, you don't taste the bourbon. If you're not a big drinker and you want something to enjoy, you know, next thing I know, you felt that punch. When I left Liberty Pool,
that's a lot of times I'll take my laptop down there to go down and work.
The government works now?
That's what they're paying to do. But I see my work decline, email decline, and I have to.
But your happiness goes up.
I have to very much plan it right, because it is very tough to go down and just have 1 or 2 cocktails, because they're amazing. It's always good company. There can be nobody in there, and I'm talking to Kevin.
It's warm.
Your bartender.
Unfortunately.
Emily.
Emily's amazing. Sometimes her fiance.
Jason, yep.
Jason.
Banner Jason.
It's always a good time down there.
So rapid fire questions here. Who is the unsung hero down there? Who runs the day-to-day? Who's the guy that keeps everybody? Well, besides mom.
Mom is the...
Like I said, the beating heart. Well, Jeff. 100% Jeff.
You gotta get that. I love asking Jeff a question about Kevin and Rob. Because remember when I asked myself, how often did he get into it? And he just silently just rolls his eyes. And I love it. I mean, to me, it's the perfect response. It's just funny because the brotherhood, you can see it. I love looking at him going, the head shake.
You know, in the military, we always talk about most mission expendable, least mission expendable. Just wonder, who's least mission expendable?
Oh, boy. Rob's not here. We can't do that.
You don't have to answer that.
Liberty,
I mean, I always have to say Rob.
Liberty pole cage fight?
It is so funny. I feel like that's why we vibe with you guys. We were military. I have good friends that are military, but I feel like we always grew up with like this like camaraderie that I so much love in like the military, and I feel like that's like we have like that like just like man like there no one's safe like you will.
So with that said, I got a question.
Yeah,
the name Liberty Pole. How did you come up with Liberty Pole?
This is a cool story.
So you know, our original location in Washington, PA, right? Washington, PA was the epicenter of the Whiskey Rebellion, right? The Whiskey Rebellion happened all over Western Pennsylvania, but it was really centered in Washington. David Bradford was, you know, a kind of a leader of the rebels. And kind of their main way of protesting that tax on whiskey was to erect Liberty Poles. Liberty Poles go back to ancient Greek times, but it's simply a pole, that has some fabric that carries the message that you're protesting. So, you know, during our fight for independence from England, right, we erected Liberty Poles to protest British rule. Once we gained independence and Hamilton passed this horrible, unfair tax on distilled spirits, then the Western Pennsylvania folks started erecting Liberty Poles to protest the excise tax on spirits. And that's where we decided, You know, it's a great brand name. It's easy to remember. Flows off the tongue. It's meaningful. That's
historical
what
ties.
Historical yeah, ties, absolutely. Right? Yeah.
So for the listeners, I'm going to challenge you, if you're interested, find out about Alexander Hamilton, right?
Yes, absolutely.
There's a reason. It's very, very cool when you walk into Liberty Pole. One of the things you see is an upside-down picture of Alexander Hamilton.
Yeah.
And it's
screw him.
I'm a history nerd. So this ties very much into the whole core of being of this area. So, you know, distilleries will come and go, and breweries will come and go, and people will pop up. When you can tie into something and you can be a part of a historical essence of an era and the legacy that flows from it, it's really, really cool. I look at the Liberty Pole. Dan, you and I can think about being in Germany. What do we have? The Maypoles. And they go back, like you said, you know, the freedom. It goes right back thousands of years, you know, legacy in the Greek culture. To have that here is just it pretty doggone special, you know, to be able.
I think it's amazing, but unfortunately, every time I walk in the Liberty Pole, the only thing I can picture is walking to the urinal. And it was
great. Oh, yeah.
Please tell me. Yes, where they...
This is mom. Again, it's mom.
Where does this come from? This is
sick mom, humor. Yeah, mom, yeah, yeah, yeah.
How to paint a picture to those that are listening right now where it is two, please.
Young ladies looking out a window, laughing, covering their mouths, and pointing.
Directly over the urinal.
Directly yeah. over the urinal. Yeah. So
it sizes you up. And
oh, yeah.
Really
oh,
hard.
You feel
yeah.
so small.
Yeah.
It hard checks your masculinity yeah. really yeah. quick. I'm like, what are you laughing at?
Yeah, your ego is often putting the shit in. That's often why I go stand on the toilet.
Well, you just sit and pee anyway, don't you? So to wrap this up, real quick, I wanna just ask Jim, you and Kevin. This is a hard question, and you hear this a lot, right? What are your X? What are your top three whiskeys? I think it's impossible to answer personally, right? It's hard for me, and so I think it's kind of a fun thing to ask our guests, and not counting Liberty Pole, top three, Kevin, go.
Mm. We said it earlier when we were having the cigar, Redbreast 27, and there was a moment we were super fortunate. We have a lot of people that bring in great whiskey, and in that moment, it tasted like strawberry ice cream, and that to me is probably my number one. And then I'd go Knob Creek Barrel Proof Rye, and I feel like I don't know if I could pick like a particular one, but I feel like any time I've had a Knob Creek, Barrel Proof Rye. And, I mean, if I had to pick one, Rob had one as soon as his daughter was born. Him and I ended up finishing that bottle together, and that was very special. And so that's number two. And then number three, I'm a big fan of New Riff, and I feel like, I feel like any New Riff rye, I've been very pleased with. So So that new school mm-hmm. kind of whiskey. Those would be my three non-Liberty Pole.
Wow. So yeah, good. So we talked earlier. My introduction to whiskey was Irish whiskey, and I'm right. still a fan. You know, I do like the Redbreast 27, but my go-to Irish whiskey is Redbreast 15. I think it's the perfect balance of oak and Irish whiskey. I love it. Second, you know, I'm a huge Pennsylvania craft guy. I love Dad's Hat.
I love
Dad's Hat Bottled and Bond. It's kind of one of my go-tos whenever I'm, you know, just looking for a quick pour. And probably my third, thinking about what I pull regularly from my shelf, is I've got a Four Roses single barrel. I feel bad I don't know the QBOE.
Yeah, you
know,
that's
so I don't even know what it is.
OSB.
Yeah, right. Oh yes. But I've got a Four Roses single barrel that has been one of my go-tos recently, and I do love that. So there you go.
That's awesome.
Yeah,
guys, I want to thank you so much. It is a pleasure knowing you. We're so thankful we have you in our backyard. I'm glad that I know you as friends. I'm glad I get to go blow my money when the wife is looking, and then
we are too.
Yeah. So yeah, more to come. Let's pump those single barrels out. And I just thank you so much for coming on and coming over. We're guys, we're about to wrap this up because we got some smoked splashcock chicken. Don't get excited there, Craig. I know that cock word popped up and you got all perked up, but dinner's in a moment there.
But I just want to jump in and I know this, you know, this is from the heart. You guys are all vets, and man, thank you for your service, and thank you guys for all you have sacrificed for us. And man, I'm tearing up here. You guys really appreciate all of your efforts.
I appreciate it. If you saw what these two did, you wouldn't be thanking.
My dad.
This
was
is
a,
what happens.
My dad was a vet. I'm not. But cheers, yeah, thank you guys. Thank you. Yeah, cheers.
Guys, I just want to end with something that we said on the first podcast, and we're new. And we really do. We want to keep this fun and topics coming in. We won't always talk about just whiskey the entire time. We had the absolute incredible chance to really get into some things that I didn't know, Dan didn't know, and Craig didn't know. Well, Craig, you don't know a lot because you're Army. That's all right. We won't hold that against you. But you know, we there's this phrase, and I think Ellen came up with it, if I'm correct, and it's one that's on a board that hangs in the little meeting room, that has really taken on a life for everybody that I know, in Pittsburgh Whiskey Friends and the Boggers and Veterans Whiskey Club, Wars and Whiskey, guys that are kind of starting to follow and tune into the Liberty Pole and this community of whiskey that we have here, because there's a lot of beautiful friendships that have flowed out of this, out of your distillery and out of this club. And that is that whiskey is better with friends.
Yes.
And there couldn't be a truer thing, I think, sure. that is said. And I just want to raise my glass and toast to you as we sign off and cheers. Guys, thank you so much.
Cheers. Thank you. Cheers to everybody.
Thanks, guys, for tuning in. We'll get another podcast up next week. And until then, stay thirsty, my friends.
Thank you for listening to today's podcast of Bullets and Bourbon. Remember to like, comment, and subscribe so you never miss an episode.